Hey, happy new year and welcome to the Football Diary podcast. Suddenly the title race looks wide open as Arsenal drop yet more points. What the hell is happening with the Gunners and how can they stay in the title hunt after such a poor run of form of late? I'm with Dave again and we'll also be looking at the excellent form of Michael Olise and Wang Hee-chan as both players and their respective teams recorded impressive wins this new year. But I guess we've got to start with Arsenal really, haven't we, Dave? Another defeat for them and a disappointing one against Fulham. And it doesn't look like they are in a position to create chances at the minute. Everything they did against Fulham looked kind of painfully predictable, didn't it? Down that right-hand side with Saka being closed down at every opportunity by the Fulham defence, who, to their credit, contained Arsenal really well. But what do Arsenal need at this moment in time, mate? We've just entered January. It's the transfer window's reopened. Do you think they'll look to invest? And do you think a striker's on the agenda for them after the way they've been performing lately?
Yeah, it's easy to say that, isn't it? I think in terms of kind of how they've looked from an attacking point of view, particularly over the last few weeks, a lot of their key players in attacking areas are a little bit out of sorts. Saka's not looking the kind of player that he was at times last year. I feel like he's been... A lot of opposition have kind of figured him out a little bit, try and show him down the outside rather than let him cut in on that left out and that left foot, which we know is, you know, he's lethal with at times. But something just doesn't look quite right with this attack, and creating enough clear cut opportunities, I don't feel. And it was, you know, they really did struggle to create in this particular game. And let's be honest, we've got to give a lot of credit to Fulham. They defended outstandingly. I thought Calvin Bassey was absolutely phenomenal in defence. You know, Anthony Robinson, I think he did really well actually marshalling that left hand side as well. And they just really struggled to threaten that Fulham goal, to be honest. And it looked like if there was going to be a winner, it was going to be a Fulham, and Fulham looked the more threatening side.
It's crazy, isn't it? Because we as United fans want to see a competitive title race when we're not involved in it, and ideally one that's not got a runaway leader of either Liverpool or Man City. And I think that's the concern for me as a neutral, that Arsenal dropping points has kind of made that less realistic now, and it looks like it could be Liverpool and City going for it again for a two-horse race. I hope that's not the case, and Aston Villa will obviously have a lot to say about that too. But Arsenal, I mean, their top scorer is Saka, I think it is, with 6 goals. And after that, it's Eddie Nketiah, who's not even a regular starter. This time last year, I think they were almost double-digit figures for the likes of Odegaard and Martinelli as well, and they're just not firing at the moment. And I can't really put my finger on why. I think there is an element of like predictability with them, isn't there? It does look like their attacks all seem very similar. They're trying to do the same thing over and over again, and it's a bit easy to read, and I think Fulham found that too. I know it sounds simplistic to say they just need a striker. I know Jesus has been in and out of the team with injury, hasn't he, too? But that extra dimension in attack is so glaringly obvious that that's what they need, isn't it? What do you think they'll do in this January transfer window, and who do you think they could go for?
It's hard to say, isn't it? I think the player that probably be perfect for them is not really attainable at the knees, Armin Toney, who is presence about him in the penalty area. And I think that's something that they lack. Somebody who's just got a bit of cutting edge and is just able to finish opportunities and actually just call opportunities out for themselves. And Nketiah's not really got the physical sort of nature to his game to be able to do that, I don't think. He kind of comes in and out of games quite often. And they've got a lot of attackers in that attacking area that like to occupy the same spaces. Trossard is not really a kind of player you want operating sort of up top. He's more of kind of, he can sort of sit behind, obviously, the striker, or play, obviously, in one of them inside forward roles. But they do really lack just a complete goal scorer, to be honest. And Gabriel Jesus, like you mentioned, is not really a natural finisher. You know, he can play the role of a complete forward who's able to do a bit of everything, but he's never been known for his finishing as such. And it's showing, really. They're just really struggling to not just carve out opportunities, but to finish them as well. And it's, they went from looking really strong challengers. And the last few weeks, it's, you know, that flame's kind of, it's flickering out, really, to be honest, at the moment. And they've lost a lot of momentum. And just be nice to see them get a bit of confidence back. It just seems like somebody needs to stand up and kind of be counted, really. at the minute because they're looking for a leader of such, especially in those areas. It's, you know, it remains to be seen who's gonna come up with the goals. Like you say, it's Saka with, you know, top scorer with 6 goals, and that's, you know, crazy really. I didn't know that. And you wouldn't really expect that considering how well they've actually done this season so far.
Well, that's the thing in terms of the goal scoring output from the top 6 teams. I think every team around them has got a goal scorer that's in the top scoring charts. Obviously, Erling Haaland at City, Ollie Watkins at Villa. Spurs have obviously got Son this season who's scoring loads. So there's some prolific players, and they're the only team I think that's lacking that cutting edge this season. And because the goals aren't coming from anywhere else in the team like they were last season, that kind of lack of a number nine is really obvious. I feel like they have to address it in January. It's not very often I'm a fan of dipping into the transfer window in January. But they need like a Van Persie type figure, don't they? Like a focal point for the attack to finish things off. And I think Tony's the man that would fit the system the best. You're right.
They've been down this road before and they've invested in a player who's, you know, on big wages, you know, Mesut Ozil being one of them. That didn't work out too well in the grand scheme of things. Well, further towards the end of his career, you know, he had a great start to his Arsenal career. But Karim Benzema is a name that's being mentioned at the minute. But it's just what it's whether they're willing to kind of go down that road again and invest heavily into, you know, an absolute superstar and give him all these wages to be kind of like a, you know, a stopgap really as such, because that's kind of what it'll be at this stage of his career. No doubt he's still got the quality, but I mean, you've got a question probably his hunger now to obviously leave Real Madrid and obviously go where he's gone. You know, a lot of players kind of signal their intent winding down their careers, really, don't they, when they go ashore that way on. And we've spoken a lot about that, particularly over the last few months, haven't we? So
yeah,
I don't think that'd be the right move for them personally, but it wouldn't surprise me if it's something that they'd look into.
Yeah, it's difficult to find anything other than a stopgap in January. I think that's the trouble they'll find. But I think in this game against Fulham, they'll be really annoyed to have conceded 2 quite cheap goals as well. The defending from set pieces is pretty awful. So they've got themselves to blame for losing the game from a defensive point of view rather than the inability to score goals as well, really. And in a title race like this, it feels like any drop points will be capitalised upon quite quickly by a few teams now. It's not just a 2-horse race, even a 3-horse race. There's the top 5 or 6 that could easily make up ground. And at the minute, Spurs are only a point behind Arsenal. And I didn't think that would be possible. Even on Christmas Day, Arsenal were top of the league, weren't they? They went through Christmas at the top of the table. And now they've slipped down to 4th. And could quite feasibly be a struggle for top 4 at this rate if they don't turn this form around. So in the title race, I mean, we're looking at obviously Man City are above them with a game in hand after their trip out for the Club World Cup. Villa are a couple of points ahead of them now in 2nd, and Liverpool stay top of the table with a game in hand. They're 2 points ahead, but could obviously stretch that lead over Arsenal to 5 points if they win that. So is there any of those contenders, and I guess Spurs are included in that as well, because they're only a point behind Arsenal in 5th. Is there any of those contenders that you think are stronger than Arsenal to finish this season better than them? Or are Arsenal still in a title race with the team they've got? Let's assume they don't sign a number 9 that suits them. How do you think this could play out?
It's a difficult one to predict, isn't it? I think you still anticipate, like, all of a sudden, obviously Man City had that little drop off, and all of a sudden they're right back in there, even now.
De Bruyne is back as well.
Exactly, yeah. And that'll be a massive bonus for them. You know, I mentioned a few weeks ago, didn't I? They don't seem to be quite the same machine without him in that team. They don't seem to carve out as many chances. They don't seem to score as many goals. And, you know, he's absolutely pivotal for them at the end of the day. I still think they'll be favourites, because we've seen it over the last few seasons. You know, they really kick on after the Christmas period, don't they? And
yeah.
It's going to be a fascinating one, because there are teams are just dropping points all over the place, aren't they, at the minute? And that's what makes it such a fascinating watch. Not just at the top, at the top of the table, but, you know, all down the league table. So I still think Man City, for me, are the team to probably go on and win it.
Aston Villa returned to form after obviously losing to United. I still feel like Villa are the team that could kick on, because they'll be annoyed to have dropped points in games where you would have expected them to probably win, and they still find themselves 2nd. So I've got high hopes for Villa. I'm sure Miles would agree. without wanting to get too carried away. I don't think this is a done and dusted title race. I don't think it's a two horse title race. I do think there's still three or four teams in it, and Arsenal are still definitely right up there for my money. But yeah, just need to address that goal scoring problem, don't they? But one team that seems to be kind of providing more goals at the minute from one player in particular is Crystal Palace, who scored three against Brentford, 3-1 win for them, with Michael Olise at the centre of it. And I just wanted to talk about his form at the minute, because he's clearly a player that's being eyed up by a few of those teams at the top of the league. And I know Man City was circling after him, Chelsea were in the summer, and he signed a new deal with Palace just to kind of stave them off. And I know his ambition is to play at that level, and he made that pretty clear in the summer. But I think Palace did really well to tie him down to a contract, and he's rewarded them so far this season, especially since his return from his injury in November, with a ton of goals and assists. And he's the kind of player, I think, that on that right-hand side is one of the best in the league at the minute. And I would put him in the bracket of maybe £80+ million as a transfer, because he's that good a player. He's an interesting one, isn't he, Olise? Because he's playing in a team where it feels like a bit like Jack Grealish with Villa a few seasons ago, where you could feel like he was clearly the biggest fish in that pond and it was ready for him to move on. And he's still, I think, developing as a player, and he's in the right place to do that as well. So I'm glad he stayed at Palace. But it's only a matter of time, surely, before he spreads his wings. He's in phenomenal form at the minute, isn't he?
Yeah, you know, Palace have got this habit at the minute of investing in young players, and actually it's a really good, you know, field for them to develop. Like you mentioned, he's shown, actually, since he's come back from his injury, he's been in an outstanding form, really. And sometimes it takes players a little bit of time to kind of get back up and running, doesn't it? But he's hit the ground running. I think it's four goals in his last four games and assist as well. But as a player, he's just a joy to watch. Just how threatening he is on the ball. He's fearless. You know, he'll take his man on all day. In terms of his actual frame as well, I think it gives him a bit of advantage. He's not the tallest player, so he's kind of got that sort of diminutive stature about him that allows him to glide past players really easily.
Yeah.
But I think the thing I like about him as well, he's not afraid of a challenge. He'll contest, and he's not fazed. He'll get stuck in. He likes to tackle. And obviously, we know all about his set piece delivery and his crossing. You know, he's just such a lovely player to watch. Like the creative side to his game. It's not many actually players in the league at the minute who are showing his sort of ability. And it's actually amazing for me to see him actually performing the way he is, in terms of how he's just come back from this injury and you know, be as threatening as he is. And it's going to be interesting to see where he makes that next step. And I know Palace fans won't like to hear us talking about obviously leaving the club, but obviously that interest that they did have in the summer from Manchester City and I think Chelsea, I think a lot of them.
Yeah.
There was rumours going around that he was set to join Chelsea, wasn't there? I think at one point.
Yeah. It's a weird one though, because Chelsea's not going to enhance him as a player at all. And I think if he thinks about his next step, is he going to develop better at Chelsea than he would have done at Crystal Palace if he'd have stayed there? No, I don't think he would. He'd be in and out of the team. There's a lot of players who play in that position already at Chelsea, including obviously the likes of Sterling and Mudrick, who themselves aren't finding consistency. If he went to Man City, which I think is a more likely option, annoyingly, I think he'd actually flourish, because he'd get managed game time in a position where they think they could do with him as well. And I would like to see him go abroad rather than City, but you know, I think that's a good fit for him. And I think Pep's the kind of manager that could develop him too. But what do you think?
I think if you look at the City, and I think the next probably player that will be out the door probably the likes of Bernardo Silva. You know, he's been at Man City for a number of years now. And there were rumours, obviously, wanting to go to Barcelona, I think it was last summer. Then he's probably a perfect fit, really. He's a very different sort of profile of player. But, yeah, you're perfectly right. I think he'll fit that team down to a T. You know, his technical ability and his actual profile will fit perfectly for the way that Manchester City play. I think he's got a lot of potential to actually improve more and add more to his game. I think particularly if you look at his first goal, for him to make that movement, I thought it was world-class, that movement that he made, and obviously to get on the end of that delivery, and the finish was, you know, brilliant, really. Not many you see kind of the outside of the boot go in like that. But I definitely think that's encouraging for him. I think he can definitely probably score more goals like that and be a bit more predatory and not just be more of a creator, because I think particularly last season, he seemed to be a bit more of a creator. Obviously, had quite a number of assists. So I think he'll feel that he can probably score more goals.
Staying at Palace, though, I think has done him good this season. I think it was the right choice for him to do, and I think we're still to see the best of him as well. He's one of the players, I think, with one of the highest ceilings in the Premier League, and he's what, 22 years old. That's really exciting, I think, for any football fan. But the fact that he's playing for Palace, I'm sure the fans there are super privileged to be able to see him week in, week out, because he's a level above a lot of players on the pitch in most games. And his link up with Ebru Chiesa as well has been really positive as well. Two brilliant players in a team that's fairly average, really, and performing pretty averagely so far. So you could see it as almost like a wasted talent. But I feel like this kind of level of Premier League football is more beneficial to him right now than being on and off the bench for a top team at the minute. If he was to go to a top team, I'd love to see him go abroad. I think he'd flourish there too. I think it'd be great for a team like Real Madrid, although they've got a lot of competition as well. The sky's the limit for him, really. I think if he makes his mind up about his international commitments as well, because I know he's played for the French under-21s, hasn't he, quite recently in the last tournament they were in. I think that would help him focus more as well, because I know England would love to have him, and I think Gareth Southgate's going to make inroads to kind of lure him into the England setup at some point, maybe after the Euros. But knowing his ambition, I think he'd be eyeing up a place in the French first team squad for this summer, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at both setups, equally as attractive propositions, really. Probably France have got the upper hand in that. They're known to have success over the last few years on the international scene. So yeah, it wouldn't surprise me for him to go on and play for them. It seems like they do have the edge at the minute, but it's, yeah, like you mentioned, he just needs to play consistently week in, week out, which he will be doing at Palace. But yeah, he does look a step above. I think him and Eze, it's well known that the two main men for Palace, and their hopes of staying up are going to rest solely on them, to be honest, and ensuring they're scoring goals, because obviously they'd struggled of late to kind of get a run of wins together. I think this is their first win in 9 games, which is crazy. We knew we'd mentioned them, haven't we, in the pod in the last few weeks about them really struggling, and it's been a bit of a worry for them. So I think this win's come at such a great time for them going into the new year, and hopefully it's a turning point.
Another player I think who's in fantastic form that I want to talk about next is Hwang Hee-chan. And we've talked about Wolves quite a bit on this podcast, don't we? And the indifferent year they've had. They had a struggle to close out last year, the whole furore with Lopetegui coming and going, and how that affected Wolves was a big story, really. And we worried about them. They've obviously come back quite strongly this season, and he's been central to that, Hwang, hasn't he? And Gary O'Neill's done a great job at Wolves, and they won, I think, 3-0, wasn't it, this week? And I don't know what it is about this guy. He's the kind of player you want on your team purely because he's a pest to play against. He's become pretty prolific now. I think he's got 10 goals this season so far in 19 appearances, which I think is a really good return. And I think him alongside the likes of Pedro Neto are making Wolves a really nice attacking team to watch as well, aren't they? Which is not what I expected either. What have you made of Hwang? He's got quite a big supporter base, hasn't he, back in South Korea, but he's becoming a bit of a superstar in England now as well.
Yeah, it was definitely, I think obviously look back a couple of years ago when he first came in, and it was an interesting one. Obviously did well at Leipzig, and he's definitely carried a lot of promise coming in. I think we didn't quite see it as often in that first season. I think he had like 20 appearances and from the start, and I think about 15 sub appearances, and I think he only scored 5 goals, and then you look at the return that he's provided this year. It does seem like Gary O'Neill's been absolutely instrumental in his form, and the way that they're playing their football really suits him down to a T. I think in the way that Wolves attack and transition from defence into attack really quickly, I think it suits him perfectly. He's actually dribbling more in this season. I think he's also got 3 assists. I think he got 2 assists in this last game as well. And you have a look at him as a threat. He's He's perfectly capable of holding the ball up. He's really dynamic in his movements as well. And it'll be interesting to see how many goals he ends up on this season. You know, he's 27 years of age now. That's probably approaching, you know, his peak. But it's great to see him coming in and actually fulfilling that sort of potential that he did have. I think he was a lot of people were aware of him in when he was in Germany, and he just looks a threat every time he plays at the minute. And he's got that little bit of a nasty streak to his game, hasn't he? Which I quite like. I think if you're on an opposition team, you really dislike him. But if he's on your team, you absolutely love him. And yeah, obviously he's scored more goals, and I think he's the top scorer for Wolves at the minute, isn't he, as well? And you mentioned there as well, another mention to Pedro Neto. It was great to see him come back in this game. He's, you know, he's been so unlucky with injuries over the last year or so, last 18 months. And all of a sudden, they're a team in form. I think they've won their last three games. And we were talking about them struggling, weren't we? how fickle football is.
It's well, Wolves are one of them teams where they've just obviously beaten Everton side, who again look like they were kind of on a resurgence as well. I know they've had an indifferent kind of last couple of games, but a 3-0 win against Everton is really impressive for Wolves, I think. And Juan didn't even get on the score sheet this time, you know. But like you say, he provided the assists and he was an extra dimension to the attack. And I think it's just that nuisance factor that really impresses me, because he's almost involved in like everything good they do. And that's kind of a measure of him as an attacking player, isn't he? He makes space and he finds space and his finishing is brilliant. So we're talking about Arsenal needed a striker. I think he's the kind of player that would really benefit Arsenal too, isn't he, Hwang? But he's definitely going to be central to whatever Wolves do this season, isn't he? And they're climbing the table too, looking at a mid-table position. Can you see him kind of kicking on and scoring more? Do you think this is just a temporary bit of form for him, or do you think he's actually genuinely the real deal in the Premier League now? I think he's proven that point.
Definitely shown that he's a real threat in terms of his physicality. I think that's what he offers differently to some of the compared to some of the other Wolves attackers. They're not exactly their present. Their physicality isn't exactly, you know, powerful as such. But whereas he does give that, and he's able to kind of bully defenders in that way as well with his frame. So yeah, you mentioned that about Arsenal, but I think they're after more of a kind of an out and out goal scorer. I think, although Hwang has obviously been a really rich vein of form, I don't think he's going to be the sort of player who's going to put up numbers of 20 plus consistently. Although, you know, he could work very well, work towards that this season. I think it's too early to kind of suggest that he's capable of consistently putting this kind of run together permanently. But you know, see where he is at the end of the season, and you know, they've got a real asset on their hands, really, Wolves, and that they just look like a threat from all angles at the minute.
Again, what a turnaround from what we were saying from the end of last season and the troubles we thought they might have. So yeah, big improvement from them. Another team that's obviously seen a big improvement lately, I want to touch on quickly, as painful as it might be, is Nottingham Forest, who have won their second game in a row, an impressive win against Manchester United. Another false dawn for United beating Villa, because we went right back to performing terribly again against Forest. But let's give Forest a huge amount of credit here. They scored two fantastic goals, didn't they, against us, and capitalised on a really poor defensive showing again from United, with in particular Morgan Gibbs-White looking like a real standout leader for them. I think his relationship with Nuno is quite clear, isn't it? You can see that they're quite a close team and a partnership that understand each other and know how to get the best out of each other. And he's performing for his manager at the minute, isn't it, Gibbs-White? And Forest's win again in this game is kind of propelled them into a position where they can look up the table rather than down again, which is a relief.
Definitely. And you talk about that relationship that they've got, obviously, between manager and player. And I think it was almost straight. It was a strange one when he first came in, because obviously I think their relationship when he was at Wolves wasn't particularly great. Obviously, he went out on loan a couple of times, went to Sheffield United, didn't he, on loan, and did really well. And you know, he's come back and he looks a completely different player. And I think Nuno's actually mentioned that in the last few weeks, hasn't he? That he's a completely different player to what he had at Wolves. You know, he's making a difference in games. His consistency throughout the games, he's not flitting in and out. He's actually, you know, making sure he makes an impact throughout games, and a brilliantly taken goal You know, I think he mentioned that he's been working on his finishing as well. You know how good he is on the ball. I think his dead ball accuracy is brilliant as well, and his deliveries, as we know, is it can be absolutely clinical at times. So it's I think people just expect him to do more now. We know that he's always been a very talented player as a young player coming through playing for England in the underages. It's just they know what he's capable of. They just need to see more of it from him. And I think he expects that of himself as well.
Yeah, Forest fans were euphoric about beating United at home as well. And you could see, I've seen on Twitter some of the comments from some of the fans saying how it felt like, I know it's early days, but like glory times again, how back in the Premier League, whenever Forest took points off the Man United at their best, at their peak, that's the kind of feeling they got in this game as well. And United are far from their peak, but Forest made them look fairly ordinary, didn't they? And I know this was a team that only recently beat Aston Villa, but it shows that you can't read too much into one-off games like that as well. But Forest made it difficult for United. I don't think United barely had a sniff at goal. And when they did, it was dealt with fairly comfortably. And I think the fact that there's been talk about Gibbs-White might have been sent off or should have been sent off or maybe could have and got away with just a yellow, didn't he? But I don't even think that changes anything. Forest were the better team, weren't they?
The first half was a scrappy affair. You know, it was actually terrible first half on both teams, to be honest. The second half, and I think the turning point was when Maynou went off, and then all of a sudden, the flow of the game, the momentum just switched in Forest's favour. I think the way that the game was going really suited them as well. It was completely wide open. United were just their midfield was pretty much non-existent, and Forest exploited that and exploited that space and operated perfectly in those areas. We saw from both goals, you know, they both pull back goals in those areas where they can really hurt teams. You know, Dominguez took his goal really well, and other players look really bright since come to Forest, and I think they've been identifying talent so effectively of late. And we mentioned obviously the second goal is a similar sort of goal. Alanga does really well on the pullback. Another player we mentioned over obviously, I think we've mentioned him last week, and actually how he's adding that end product to his game now as well. So it's looking really positive for them. And you know how it was all doom and gloom even a couple of weeks ago, and all of a sudden they're on the up again.
I'm going to have to finish on talking about Manchester United as well, Dave, because like you said, I think on your Twitter account, it was another false dawn beating Aston Villa, wasn't it? Because this game was a return to the stop-start form we've had all season, really. Yet another defeat. We've never seen this many defeats in the Premier League in our lifetime, I don't think, have we? It's a sobering time for Manchester United fans at the minute. There's obviously talk of obviously the partial takeover being ratified, and I've seen today talk of like Rafael Varane's contract not being extended because they want to offer him a new deal at a reduced salary. What are your thoughts about that? Because that's a direction that I don't think the club would have taken maybe 3 or 4 years ago under like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, for example. I think they would have, without hesitation, extended his contract and not changed his salary at all. But I kind of feel like that's almost the right way to operate when you can see a player who, although he's world class for Varane when he's fit, he's rarely fit and he's taken him such a big salary. It doesn't make business sense to keep his contract going as it is, does it?
No, the club are digging themselves out of a hole in that respect, though. You know, they've got themselves into this position where they've got all these players on these ridiculous wages. It's going to weed out the players that actually aren't that bothered about playing for the club, but they're for the money more so. If you really want to play for Man United, you know, you'll go. You shouldn't have to have the incentive of earning 250 grand a week. And then when you come in on 250 grand a week, or you know, 300 or 200, what's the incentive to improve more? You know, well, you're already on a top end wage that I think it'd be hard to kind of motivate you to improve even more, really. And that's the ridiculous thing we've done is obviously, I think Anthony's on 200,000 a week, which is crazy, really. You know, didn't exactly tear it up in Ajax. It wasn't pulling out ridiculous numbers. And we have these players who are coming on these ridiculous figures, and we put ourselves in this position. It's going to be a difficult one to get out of, to be honest, because there's so many players in there on these astronomical figures that it's going to take a while to clear it out, isn't it? Let's be honest. Varane itself, you know, his injury record's not been great at all. over the last couple of years he's been at the club. So I can't blame. I think it's the right decision from the club, to be honest. I do think they need to offer a reduced salary or just let him go, because, you know, we're heading in a different direction now. The club wants to move forward, you know, look into the future. He's not got age on his side, let's be honest. And it's going to be the same. It'll be the same situation with the likes of Casemiro as well. You know, we've signed him a couple of summers ago, and it's a similar sort of age profile again. We're going to be looking forward to bringing younger players through and going in a different direction.
Yeah, well, another example I think this week that was highlighted of how wasteful United have been in the transfer market in the last few years is Donny van der Beek as well going to Eintracht Frankfurt alone with an option to buy that's not mandatory for 11 million euros plus add-ons at the end of the loan, which is just peanuts, isn't it? We paid 40 million for him. To a lot of fanfare as well, but never really found his place in the system or the team. Clearly wasn't signed to fill a particular role or position that we had in mind. I don't think any manager's known what to do with Van der Beek, and he's also never really impressed when he's been given a chance, has he? So, I mean, these kind of players leaving the club for pennies kind of highlights so much about how badly we've dealt with transfers, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's crazy, really, how many signings were made and how few of them have actually made sort of like an impact. And the ones that have made an impact as well, we still don't know in the grander scheme of things if they're actually the right pick for the team. Like, what's the setup? What's the actual template or style of play that we're trying to play? You know, we mentioned Bruno Fernandes, who's been a key player for United over the years, but I just don't know what we're buying players for, and that's the big question mark around things. A player I'd like to mention in this game, obviously Diallo came on, didn't he? And about fifth, I think it was beginning of the second half for Anthony. He obviously had a terrible game. And the thing that stood out for me is that in terms of technically, I think his ability on the ball, in terms of his weight of pass, his vision, his touch, his control is completely on a different level to anything else in our squad. And as much as there's a good bit of praise that is for Diallo, that's also such a, like, that just says a lot. It says everything about our recruitment, doesn't it? There's a lot of players in that team that just aren't quite up to the standard.
Well, it's even when you look at players we've let go that are performing better since they've left. The likes of Anthony Elango, you know, James Garner as well. I don't know why we let him go. You know, he could have played a role. We have players within our squad who have since gone that haven't had a chance to shine. And we've spent a lot of money on expensive players that just haven't passed the test, really, of a Premier League player, let alone one that's worth £100 million, for example, in Anthony. I really hope we see a different recruitment direction going forward. Now this has almost kind of been ratified and kind of verified, this partial takeover of the club, because there seems to be a clearer sporting structure there, doesn't there? And if that means getting rid of a few players that are, you know, quite good players, but just are paid too much or aren't the direction the club wants to go in terms of their age profile, then so be it. I feel like we've got to go through that rough to find the smooth at the end of the tunnel, really, because we've had so many years of this kind of same cycle of transfer policy with no clear direction. I would love to see positions identified as weaknesses and actually recruited for going forward. Maybe not in January. I feel like if we signed any players now, it'd feel quite reactionary, wouldn't it? But this summer has to be early business and obviously clear business that's going to benefit the team.
Yeah, it's going to require a lot of patience, isn't it? You know, it's a thing we've been through countless times. It's just getting boring, though, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? It seems like we're just on this cycle which we can't get out of. Let's just hope that obviously Ineos can come in and make sort of the impact that fans want.
Yeah, difficult times for United fans to just swallow what's going on, isn't it? But, you know, I think we do admirably, the two of us, through this podcast and talking about them. It's hard sometimes, isn't it? But I feel like this is the first time in maybe 5 years we can see some kind of progress in the club, in the hierarchy, and I will absolutely take that. But to finish the pod, thank you for watching anyway, listening to us moan about United week in, week out. Hopefully we shine spotlights on the clubs that you all support, and, you know, we'll try and highlight some clubs that are doing particularly well. We've talked about Nottingham Forest, Aston Villa, Newcastle quite a few times this season. if you want your club mentioned as well, please do give us a shout. We're on all socials at Football Diary UK. Go over to YouTube, give us a sub there if you can, just to follow our journey through the season and as we talk about all the comings and goings of the Premier League title race and beyond. But thank you for your support. Dave, happy new year to you. Happy new year to all our viewers. And as always, Glazers out, mate.
See you next time.